to be a parent is just a hard job. I'm realizing that, you know, it's just a hard job. Whether they're three, whether they're five, you're responsible for the future of this child. What you say, what you do. But at the end, know that God has deposited so much in you that it's not meant to be kept in a box. It is meant to be shared with others.
You're listening to the Nick Vujicic Podcast, the place where you will be coached in how to turn your obstacles into opportunities, inspired to dream big, and challenged to never give up. Now here's our host, New York Times bestselling author, speaker, and entrepreneur, Nick Vujicic.
Hi, and welcome to this episode on the Nick Vujicic Podcast. As you know, I have been blessed to go around the world, meet a lot of people, and work with a lot of people. And on this Monday episode, I am so excited to have Peter Tafoya, who's been working with us. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Hi, thank you.
Peter Tafoya from Southern California, one of the most inspiring people in my life. We've worked together for 5 years. And man, I've learned a lot from our friendship and just your life story, you and your wife fostering and adopting, and we'll get into that a little bit later. And before we get into the today's episode, I wanted to make mention of my friends at Storyville Coffee. If you are a coffee drinker, Peter can attest to the fact that it is best coffee in the world. Yes. We've been on it for many, many years. And one of the beautiful things about Storyville Coffee is their mission and vision to end human trafficking, and a massive portion of their net profits go towards rescuing slavery in that industry. And so check it out, a coffee drinker, Nespresso's, K-cups, whole beans, whatever you're doing, it comes to your door. Check it out, storyville.com/Nick. There's a promo code for our listeners here on the podcast, 50% off the first shipment order. Check it out, storyville.com/Nick, promo code N-I-C-K. Thank you, Storyville, for what you do. We love you. And hello now to everyone joining around the world. Peter, we have around 8,000 subscribers, 7,000 subscribers, which is really cool. Yeah. All around the world. Now, you've traveled the world with me. Do you have, first of all, any range of idea how many countries we did together-ish?
Oh, man. We're talking about 5 years ago. I think the last time I heard you mention was over, I probably had 30-ish over with you.
30. But multiple visits, right?
Oh, yeah, multiple visits.
Peter, I just want to say you are an awesome man of God. You've been a brother to me, and I love our friendship, how we met through mutual friends.
Yeah.
Before we met, I would love to know just if you could give us an introduction to who Peter is, what he was doing before you and I met, and then how did we meet? Right. And this was your first caregiving job. And I'd love to just start that with you introducing yourself to everyone. I just want you to know, Peter, you'll always be one of the most inspiring people in the world. And I love you, man. Miss you.
I miss you so much, man. Thank you for having me here. I met, the way I came across you is funny because a lot of people have been asking me this question lately. Like, how did you meet Nick? By trade, I was an interpreter. I was interpreting at my local school district. Then one of Nick's interpreters asked me, hey, Nick might need an assistant caregiver, which would be interested in. My automatic reply was, no, I don't qualify. That's not my thing. He's like, well, I already put your name on the list. He's like, hey, I want you to meet him. So we kind of just took off from there. I went, met you for a coffee. I remember that. We hit it off. And I think about a month and a half later, I came on board. And that's kind of how I started my story with you over 5 years ago. Nothing, I didn't expect it to be the way it turned out to be. You know, it was,
in a good way,
good way, fun, exciting, a lot of head scratching moments. Like, what are we going to do? Didn't see that on day one, obviously, you know, but lately I've just been going through a lot of pictures, obviously, and pictures speak a thousand words sometimes, you know, because I was just letting my wife know yesterday, you know, I just feel grateful for everything that has happened in these last 5 years, the challenges, the blessings, the coming homes, it's just been a big package these past 5 years. And I think it's going to be a package that I'll be looking at for probably for the rest of my life. And because there's just so many key moments that I felt God just meet me there. And so, yeah, it's been an incredible journey. And now here I am 5 years later, married, coming up on my 10th year of marriage, raising five boys, five sons. Yesterday it hit me, you know, by being home, my boys were playing hide and seek. And if you ever know how boys play hide and seek, they do not play hide and seek like girls. Tag, you're it. And like shove, you're it. And breaking stuff falling over. I think me and my wife just tapped out like, well, dude, they're just going to play hide and seek and we should just go for the ride here, you know?
Yeah. So you're in your 5-year-old room, right? You're
currently in a 5-year-old room. Yeah.
Yeah. One of your sons, and I'm in the master bedroom, in our, temporary home, if you will, here in Texas. I'm in a corner and, quarantine. Yeah. With four little kids under 7 as well. As hot as it is outside, I've been doing a lot of stuff outside. But quarantine, man, you know, obviously that changed our life forever.
Yep.
Apart from the anticipated move out of state, which means that, you know, we're no longer unfortunately working together because of that relocation. But, you know, you out of most caregivers would now understand, you traveled probably the most out of anyone. You are equal to the longest caregiver ever in years, but you did it straight. And we did some trips. Yeah. We did some travels. And we've got some good stories, hard stories, funny stories.
Yeah.
You've seen it all.
Yeah.
But what I love about our friendship is you also have seen me the most as a father now as well, and a husband, and being away from home.
Yeah.
You and I experienced that. And you seeing me now with a completely brand new life, and me just a little displaced and puzzled. Right. In that. I want to know how it feels for you, because we on average, you and I, we traveled probably, I don't know, 20 weeks a year, would you say, on average?
Oh, yeah.
And now you being at home, how is that for you now, being at home? And obviously you have now another caregiving job, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. At this point. And that's great that, you know, that's a stepping stone for the next chapter in your life on a vocational level. But on a family level, you being home, how weird is that now after 5 years being on the road, kind of like a roadie almost, a travel experience? How does it feel being home?
I think you used the perfect word. It's been weird. Some people might take that strange to you that I'm using that word, but actually it is. Because it happened, we saw it coming. But then it just happened. And then, you know, your normal, I guess our brains were so used to running, you know, like, okay, we had X amount of days of being home. And, you know, we had every segment of each day scheduled out. You're talking about beach trips to grocery runs. And now it's kind of like, it's a very slow, slow pace for me that I'm really having a hard time submitting to it. I think that'll be the word, submitting to that slow pace. Because if it was, like I said, if it was a Friday evening that we're going to be flying out and my wife wanted to make a Walmart grocery run, you know, it was like, okay, I got to be in bed by 8:30 because I have a long day coming up the next day. And it still lingers, you know, where I'm on the go, go, go. And my wife sometimes has to tap me on the shoulder. Hey, you got nowhere to be tomorrow. You're good.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, and really, it's kind of like a snap where you're like, oh, yeah, I don't have nowhere to be tomorrow. Right. So, or when, you know, right here near where I live at, Southwest Airlines has their route, you know, and I've been like you, I've been outside, I've been fixing stuff, upgrading stuff. And I look at Southwest Airlines pass like every 20, 30 minutes. And, you know, you ponder like, oh man, that was me 3 months ago. Or I remember flying over this part of my house, like I'm almost home. So all these nostalgic feelings just come up. And they do take me away sometimes, you know. Yeah. And then it's kind of like just coming, you walk through my front door and I got to be the referee between four boys about the most minor things. But to them, it's like the most major things. But I think the hard part has just been, I think I've been afraid. Like, Lord, I don't want to, like, this is a fragile moment of life right now, you know. I'm home. Help me be a good steward in being patient, in being kind, and in slowing down, you know. So that's the best way I can describe it right now.
It's good. It's good. What are you most looking forward to now in this new chapter of your life right now with your family? And then secondly, I'd love for you to tell people about your family, as much as you can or feel to share. And how you and your wife Isabella got into fostering and kind of your story. I'd love to share that with our audience.
Yeah. I think the one thing, if I can be sincere, the one thing that I'm looking forward to, and again, me and my wife have had so many, we're having a lot of poker conversations right now. We've been playing poker almost every other night.
That's awesome.
Seven card stud poker, I mean, you name it. And it's been a catch-up time, really. It's been a catch-up time these past couple months. If there's one thing that I'm looking forward to, it's to the bad days that my kids will have at school, whenever that happens, when they go back to school. Because as we know, we're living today in a completely different time. And I know last year, my wife picked up a lot of those bad days. You know, and if a bad day at school happened on a Monday and dad was on a plane, he had to wait 9 hours. I had to wait 9-10 hours to find out about that bad day, you know. And by that time, trying to come home, you're looking at 15 days where you're trying to catch up on one bad day. But by that time, you know, the moment has passed. My kids have probably moved on from it. So I'm looking forward to being home for those bad days at school. You know, those, hey, well, you know what? Dad's home. Let's go get a coffee. Let's go for a hike and talk about it. That's what I'm looking forward to, really, if I can be honest with you.
I love that. Love that. And for those of you who really, this is a cool platform, having a podcast, because I could basically do whatever I want on this show and no one tell me what to say, what not to say, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And then I also get to share side of me and my life, my passions, my dreams, my calling, without filter. And without reservation, and share some passions that maybe I haven't become so vocal about. One of them is fostering and adopting here in this country. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, first of all, my dear friends, Andy and Lee out of Phoenix, Arizona, they were the very first people in my life back in 2003. We're talking about however many, 17 years ago, when I, even before I based myself permanently here in America, met them through a disability ministry in a local church, and they adopted ADHD, bipolar, special needs children. And it was the first time that I really was exposed to what that kind of looks like in any way, shape, or form. I mean, I was always raised up in a home where Europeans, our culture is, we talk about those people, you know, around the world who don't have food, who don't have a home. But it never really came up. It was quite foreign to us to really ever think about, talk about foster adoption.
Right.
I was just so moved by their story while Andy was blogging about their little girl that they fostered, Kaylee, who's not a little girl anymore, in touch, reunited with their biological, with her biological dad. Just really, really cool experience for me to see that. However, 5 years ago is when I learned about the foster care and adoption system here in America. I learned about the fact of a 500,000 kids approximately waiting for a foster home, or over 100,000 to be adopted. Learned a lot about this in America, the need and the gap that right. you and your wife felt to step in and try to fill in. And you're just, you're a champion. Your wife, freaking hero.
Yeah,
amazing, amazing. Huge inspiration. Your marriage, how you guys keep it together. And then you travel. And then, you know, I'll never forget, Pete, before I let you loose, I'll never forget Kiyoshi was crying in the night many, many, many times, right? And how many, first of all, how many foster children have you had through your home-ish in the last how many years?
The last 7.5 years, I think we've had about 36 now. 36.
Amazing, 36. And so I'll never forget, you came in one morning, and I'm wrecked. I'm tired because I got woken up by Kiyoshi, you know, a couple times during the night, and I hate interrupted sleep. And after me telling you what's going on, I was like, yeah, I had a bad night too. I'm like, what happened? We had a baby, you know, foster baby, and the mother of the baby was addicted to drugs, had drugs in her system while she was pregnant, and now this baby's going through, what do you call that?
Withdrawals.
Withdrawals, and crying for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours straight. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I got nothing to complain about, right? Pete, how did you and Isabel get into that mission, world-changing mission? Tell us about it and how it changed your life.
Definitely, it's been a life changer. Like I mentioned, the 36 kids that we've had in our home. The way it just came about was we were just maybe 2.5 years married, a little over that, coming up on our third year. And we were trying to have a baby. We couldn't have a baby. The sister from our church, she had been fostering kids for like over 20 years. And she said, hey, you know what? Just go ahead and you can adopt through the foster care system. Fast forward, we signed up. We did the courses and we met. We got within 6 months, we were certified. Within a month, we had our first set of sisters. They said, hey, well, these girls would be legally your daughters in less than a year. Had our hopes up. That didn't happen. You know, one of those girls was the first. We were brand new parents, if you want to call it that. We didn't know really more than wipe their butts and throw away their diaper, you know, and feed them, of course. But then, you know, and then, you know, then these set of girls winded up there was a judge ruling that said, hey, you guys got 24 hours to surrender these kids. You got to surrender them right away. And we did. We turned over these girls to their biological family. We were heartbroken completely. We had basically said, you know what, this is not for us. We're not going to do this. We're just going to move forward with our own lives. 2.5, 3 weeks later, I got a phone call. There's three sisters who need a home. Ran it by my wife. She was just like, I don't know, Pete, but let's just go ahead and do it. You know, the social workers at that time said, hey, they'll be out of your house by Monday. We just need, you guys got the availability of beds. We just need these sisters to have a house for the weekend. We said yes. And on that Friday night, we heard, you know, some of the most horrific details of what it is to be involved in the child pornography business. And it came on from the mouth of a 4-year-old and then her 12-year-old. Little did we know that it was actually a local case in our area. And it was about maybe over 40 kids that were exposed, that were being sold online through child pornography. Right there in that moment, as we heard the horror story, we really felt the call from the Lord to say, hey, I'm calling you to be a father and a mother to those that don't have fathers and mothers. And that's when we decided, we put these girls to bed. Me and my wife, you know, went to our bedroom like, whoa, that was heavy. What are we going to do? because we had just signed up for a weekend. We called our social worker that evening and we said, hey, listen, we're in it for the long haul. Wherever this goes, we're in it for the long haul. The great story about these three girls is that we got to see the restoration process. And 7.5 years ago, resources were very limited. So the resource that we had in our lives was really God. The resource that we had in our life was our local church. The resource that we had in our life was my wife being a worship singer. And we got to see really how these young three little girls, three sisters, whose life was destroyed through the child pornography business, we saw them be restored. Their happy story at the end was that an aunt winded up selling a property, bought a bigger house, and she winded up adopting them. And about, we got a phone call about a year later after that. I was at one of my friend's wedding, and it was our, you know, our 12-year-old foster daughter at that time. She said, hey, do you know who I am? I'm like, yeah, I recognize your voice from anywhere. She said, well, I just wanted to call and tell you thank you. Thank you for loving me. Thank you for loving my sisters. Thank you for opening up your home. And she says, but thank you for giving me my first Bible. And these girls winded up you know, living a really great life, and that's where we've been doing it ever since. We've had teenage boys. We're now known as a local boy home just because we house boys. Currently, we're in the process of finalizing three of our boys' adoption process. But with COVID, everything got postponed until last year. So until next year. Sorry. So we're waiting on that. We adopted our five-year-old son out of the foster care system. He came into the home when he was 3 months. And now we have a biological son. So he's getting the benefits of having four older brothers right now.
Love that. Love that. Congratulations to you and your wife in the beauty of your family. You know me really well. And the passion that kind of ignites some kind of righteous rage within me when we look at, first of all, let's talk about the good stuff here. You and I have seen and witnessed a lot of good organizations within the church who have fostered children, adopted children. There are some amazing programs out there out in Florida. What's Kevin's one?
I can't think of the name right now, but
it'll come to us later. Yeah. But it was absolutely incredible. Yeah, you can check your phone. No worries. But the just really cool programs. I'm not saying that no one's doing nothing. You know, there is no one doing something, if you will. There are some incredible stories that you and I have even come across of like a couple in their 60s and 70s, and they've now started fostering. Multiple kids in California. Mm-hmm. But you know, in a whole holistic point of view, America, right? The church was the organization back in the day before the government took over to actually take care of the orphans who would be in babies on trains and stopping at stations, and the church would come and pick up a child. To now it being what it is today, and then the other side is yeah, that dark side. What happens on the statistics of those who are in a group home, the safety in a group home, or lack of the difficulties of the system. There's not even a real good back end of agencies really talking to each other as much as we could in 2020. There are some cities that have an overflow of demand for a family. And then there are other cities where there are more families than kids needed in that county. And that disconnect is what I'm talking about. Plus, on top of the fact that as of last year, there are about 100,000 churches in America, and we build buildings, right, for our sanctuaries. And one of the stats that I heard was $480 billion is to the name of the churches in America for buildings in debt. And It's a lot of money, half a trillion. And there are 500,000 children waiting to be finding a home. If 100,000 churches, I mean, in my mind, if 100,000 churches, look, you know me, I'm not going to tell someone, hey, you should foster or you should adopt, as much as, hey, let's get behind the people who actually are called, convicted to, qualified to, anointed to become a family for these children in some way, shape, or form. And then 99 people in that church come around that one family. And I heard the stories from you about what it takes just to have one foster child and the driving alone that you have to do and the meetings from the biological to the medical doctor to the psychologist to the school meetings, all these things. And it really like poked me. And it's been welling up in me, like, what can America really do to understand that it's, look, I'm all for sponsoring kids, right? We have 15 children that we sponsor abroad. And, you know, we see their photos, we get to write their letters. That's fantastic. But what about America? And when you look at the stats of kids graduating out of the foster system, to then the percentage, sorry, but you know, the stats are the stats, then how it correlates to the percentage of these kids who don't have a role model, who don't have healthy stability in values, in role models, in protection, in mentoring, going out of a system to then a big portion going into the prison system and the juvenile facilities. And how that correlates, and then reverse engineering that, where the government, correct me if I'm wrong, charges around $40,000 to adopt a child. And then you need to go through this process. And I'm not bagging down the government. I'm just saying, this is the system where we're at, but together we can help. Like if 40,000 people come along once a week and give a dollar, you know, we can underwrite that. And there's innovative ways that you and I have discussed about how, you know, how could we really band together all the people that are called to do it and then raise up an army to really say, you know what, it's time that we actually, you know, got to take care of those who don't have a dad and help them. And you could be a single parent and foster, right? Yeah. And adopt, which is great. And so how do we come alongside of our communities and make a difference on this level? What are the false preconceptions as to why people don't go into fostering? What are those kind of layers, Pete? Introduce our audience to that. Why do some people think about doing it? But maybe the top three reasons why they don't go to the finishing line on that, to encourage those who've been thinking about it and the need for it, and what made you cross that line and say, no, we're going to be all in, apart from the story that you just shared.
Right. No, I mean, I think...
Because it's hard. None of this is easy.
Oh, yeah.
None of this is easy. You never want to try to convince someone to do it if they're not supposed to do it. But on that national level, react to whatever I just said, however you want to react. But, you know, like, where's the church kind of thing? And then why don't we, you know, when we think about it, obviously there are some, you know, preconceived ideas or fears. Great. But how did you overcome that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, definitely fears. I think you said it best. A lot of fears, especially now, like it's 7.5 years later that we've been doing this. You're starting to hear more and more about child abuse cases. And I think even now, under quarantine or lockdown, however you want to call it, there is a reality out there. There is an abusive world out there. There is dysfunctional homes out there. And all these, at the end, affect children. There's no such thing as a bad kid or a bad child. The truth is, we've hosted kids, you know, who came from really, 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 really tough backgrounds. And we got to see those backgrounds come into our home. You know, we got to see the gang mentality. We got to see the, the how kids were raised to steal food or to steal whatever they wanted, and all that comes into your home. You know, all you bring a different world to your world, and you're going to have exactly that. You're going to have a collision of two worlds coming together. And there's really nothing you can do about it to stop that from happening inside your home. But there is something that you can do to embrace it, to understand it, to say, well, you know what, this child took my $20 bill from my, you know, my cigar box where I keep my stuff, you know, my keys and whatever. Now it's an opportunity for me to be an influence in this child's life, you know, and rather than why did you take it? Like, hey, listen, like, I know you took the $20, sparked a conversation a lot of the times for me. You know, we got to see the history of, well, I was raised to go into Target and, you know, take out a bunch of diapers, and that's, and then you got, then you see the bigger picture. This is not a child. This is a child that was exposed to something at such an early age, and his brain literally adapted to it, and he's only doing what he was raised to do. But then it's the perfect opportunity to show them also the discipline, the consequences that come from, you know, stealing. You know, stealing starts off with the small, and then it goes off to the big. But it is hard. It does bring a change to your home. I would say that it flips your home upside down, you know, because literally my house, when, you know, I was a nitpicker to cleaning. I like having a clean house. I was raised by a single mom who, hey, your house needs to be clean throughout the entire day. I let that go, I think, 2 years ago, if I could be honest with you guys. You know, I was that, okay, I'm currently sitting in front of a bunch of toys. I think I told my son to organize his toys so many times. But children are children. You know, at the end, I really believe, and I've heard it through some of these kids that have come into the home, their biggest desire is just to have a family. You know, their biggest desire is to have probably what their friends from church have, a mom and dad to go to church together. Their biggest desire is to be picked up by a man. You know, I know that my sons were, you know, the stories that I've heard from them, the physical touch that they had from a man was a completely different one. You know, it was an abusive one. It was a sexual abusive one. You know, I still carry my 13-year-old son, which he is getting bigger by the day. You know, I still pick him up and I'll wrestle with him. And he lets me know, I like the way you wrestle with me, or I like the way you pick me up. Or my other son, he likes it when I just grab him on a headlock and I just squeeze him, you know? But kids have a desire for a home. Kids want that. I'm currently mentoring a 14-year-old boy who was in my home here last year. And though he's in a group home setting and his circumstance is different, he still calls me his dad. You know, his social workers say, dude, why do you call this guy your dad? He's not even in, he's like, no, he's like, though I can't live in his house because of rules that were implemented already, he's still going to be a dad to me, you know? And yeah, he'll call me, hey dad, how are you? And I'll be honest with you, it's uncomfortable for me because it strikes a nerve. This young man views me as his dad, but we can't come in contact with each other. We're over the phone, you know? He tells me about his day. He calls me twice a week. Hey dad, you know, this was my, and that is gut-wrenching. When you know that there's only so much you can do, but a phone call, I'm not willing to let go of that phone call, because I know that though I have a 20-minute phone call with him twice a week, those seeds that I'm planting in him, they're gonna bear fruit. Why? Because I had men in my life, in my local church, come around me. My mom was a single mom, and I think that's what I can end with that. If you're part of a local church or local community and you know of single moms, pray about it. But these young kids need a community, someone that they can go to, especially if you have teenagers. Right now I'm really hard on like promoting, you know how to do an oil change, and you know teenagers in your local community, you know that a teenager is going to sit in their bed for the rest of the day and probably do nothing. But take the time, hey, listen, I noticed that you live right across the street, obviously with permission from the parents. I wanted to show you, how do you do an oil change? Because these teenagers are growing up, they're going to grow up to be 20 years old, 19 years old. And they need these simple, you know, lessons, because it brings fellowship, it brings unity. And I just spoke to a man, 38 years old, over the weekend, and he said that his neighbor took him underneath his wing. His neighbor had like a glass business, and he showed him how to run a glass business. He's like, I don't run a glass business now. He's but he taught me the discipline of what it is to through the good times, through the bad times. And he's like, this man was a positive influence in my life. So I would say that, you know, pray, ask the Lord to show you those kids, those families that you could be an influence to.
So good. And those fears on a personal level, am I going to be adequate enough? Is that the heart wrenching of when you get a child and you let them out through that door, you know, over those cycles. I mean, the list goes on as to the difficulties, but obviously it comes back to, you know, really, are you called to do it? And if those feel called, but are so still hesitant to move forward, what would you tell that person still deliberating or a couple deliberating this opportunity? And they're still kind of hesitant, holding back. Forget about COVID and the fact that we're in 2020, it's a different world. But what I'm saying is the principle of this, it's going to open up again. You know, the world, however that's going to look, there's going to be adopting, there's going to be fostering. And maybe this is a time where one couple is watching right now, who've been thinking about it, who've been maybe even talking about it last year. What would you tell that couple to say, hey, yeah, go for it?
Yeah, I think exactly what you just said, go for it. As couples, whether you have one child or you have no kids, like me and my wife were, you know, we had a lot of our talks alone in the bedroom. And when we finally signed up for that class, I kid you not, we're like, okay, we're going to do this. Yeah, we're going to do this. Because in our hearts, we felt it. What did it look like? We had no clue. You know, they don't give you a program. I don't care what foster agency you go to. They don't give you a program. They'll give you a standard. This is how children are. But at the end, it comes down to if your heart is in it, respond to that part. You know, because God calls us to look out after the less fortunate. God, Jesus mentioned the orphans, you know. And these children, in some shape or form, they are orphans. Whether their dad went to jail for 10 years, or whether their dad abandoned them at the age of one, or their moms, or, you know, vice versa. We're called to look out after them. And if you're having second thoughts, like, I don't know, it's going to be hard, I can guarantee you it's going to be hard. Those are not doubts. Those are real feelings. It's going to be hard, you know, because to be a parent is just a hard job. I'm realizing that, you know, it's just a hard job. Whether they're three, whether they're five, you're responsible for the future of this child, what you say, what you do. But at the end, know that God has deposited so much in you that it's not meant to be kept in a box. It is meant to be shared with others. And that's what my kids are starting to tell me. I'm just starting to see that part. You know, my sons are starting to do things that I do, or speak the way my wife speaks, or just look out after each other. And that's been 3 years in the making. They've been with us for 3.5 years. So we're just starting to see that fruit come about.
I love it. And, you know, I've said it in before I get into the next thing. For those of you who are not thinking about adopting, if you know of a family that does, or someone who knows someone else, let me just say, if I was a foster parent, if I'm an adopting parent, which me and my wife, we have discussed this topic ourselves, and we've got this season of life where that's not just viable for our family right now. But, you know, to underwrite free homework tutorial for your children, to underwrite for that foster family, give them a babysitting, you know, cash that they can find a babysitter, you know, you organize babysitting within the church to allow those foster parents to go on a date, right? To help out in any way, shape, or form. You're in a church and you got a foster family in the church. Has anyone offered that foster family, hey, can I come once a week and clean your house? Can I just do something? Is there anything, a handy, you know, person to come and you know, fix up the gutters or whatever? Everyone needs help, and all help is welcome. And that's part of making a difference. The vertical that came to me right now is understanding that there is some millennials watching. Mm-hmm. And I'm not afraid to say it again. I think the next generation, don't take offense to this, is one of the most egotistical, centric, self-centered generations the world has ever seen. And there's a layer of that and layers of why I think it has happened that way. That's a separate topic. However, at the same token, the most compassionate, arguably generous generation to come. And in that, if there's any millennials watching, I want you to hear me very clearly. Me and Pete, we have friends in dozens of countries around the world. We watch the world news, actually. And we know things before America puts it on TV months before. And we want to let you know, for you to understand, kind of just bringing back from the world global, not peace, but hope, right? World changing. You want to change the world? Listen to me very carefully. Right now, it's not really public general information yet. People have heard of locusts going across Africa and India, sure, great. But no one's really talking about the fact that middle-class people in Africa, with all the shutdown and the poorer parts of this world, not just Africa, Latin America, and parts of Europe and whatever, but it is difficult for those struggling financial countries to really see hope right now. And what do we do? Okay, so we can send food to those who don't have food. We can send clothes to the naked. We could build houses, sure, for those who don't have a home. You can sponsor a kid. You can give towards international justice mission for human trafficking. You could get into something somewhere, participate somehow. And to the millennial watching, if you want to make a splash, an impact in this world to make it a better place. Obviously, when you have starvation, you could get in touch with a nonprofit, you know, that helps feed. I don't have to expand this anymore. If it's human trafficking, it's international justice missions. Right. Many, many organizations out there. The story of us understanding that slavery and need is right in our own backyard. I actually feel, Pete, that there'll be teenagers looking at their parents who are 45 years old who actually say, hey, why haven't we fostered or adopted? Have you ever thought of that? I want this to be also a conversational starter in the home, in American homes. You know, what would you tell? Because I reckon that there'd be some teenagers saying, oh my gosh, I want to make a difference. I'd want to be a brother or a sister to somebody who's never had a brother or sister. Speak to the millennials, man. I reckon this could be the generation that actually sparks a spark that we've never seen before in our country.
Well, no, actually, you're sorry about that. You're very much on point on that. We have a young lady, I would consider her millennial. And my kids know her as Donut Geraldine. And why? I kid you not, this young lady, we've known her for a while. She's rallied, her and her husband have rallied around our family. And they're young. They actually have no kids. She just became a registered nurse. But the way this young girl rallies over our family, it's in such a cool way. She makes donuts for us, right? And you might say, well, it was just donuts. But it's another added member to our community and our home. You know, that my kids now know, they listen to her, because even during COVID, she'll come and drop off donuts and homemade donuts at that. And she just like pours into the kids. Hey, how are you doing? She's just such a great, great, this is one. Like I'm telling you, because she's young, I'm kind of putting her on the spotlight. And she is making a difference in our home. I remember when my wife had her baby, our baby at that, she jumped on it. She said, hey, listen, me and my husband, we're going to go drop off dinner. You may not know, my son was in the ICU for about a month. This young girl and her husband looked out after my kids, dropping off dinners every night. pizza Fridays with them. And she was just such an she is such an amazing blessing, where she's constantly checking in. Do you guys need anything? Is there anything that I can do for you? But more importantly, that she has built a community within my home, you know, and now my kids know, and I vouch for them, you know. Her husband's an electrician, and he came over, I think, sometime last month, and I needed some work done, and he's reaching out to my kids. And so we're literally building relationship, and we're seeing the blessing of, or such an amazing thing where my kids are starting to recognize certain members in my community. Then they know, hey, I can go to Uncle Ronald because Uncle Ronald, he's dad's best friend for the past 18 years. But Uncle Ronald understands fashion more than dad, you know. Hey, Uncle Ronald, what do you think of this shirt, you know? For me, I was like, wow, these are my sons identifying with members of more than the grandma, more than the grandpa, because it's the famous slogan, it takes a village to raise a child. One of my other young friends, Cameron, he's just so full of life. And this guy, when he shows up, like if there's a party going on inside it, but he's just a happy guy. And one of my sons asked him, Cameron, why are you always so happy? He says, man, his life is beautiful. He's like, I got God in my life. I have my mom in my life. And he just lets them know, again, another member of the community than my kids. So like I said, I am blessed to say that my boys, and I think that's what's needed. Because, yeah, you have foster parents who are working. You know, me and my wife work from 9 to 5. And I think our kids, we need a break sometimes too. You know, we need that break to catch up more than the 45 minutes that we have a night, because that's usually what we have after the day is over. We need that break too. And we've had those people that rally around us. You know, my friend Victor, when we were going over his house, you know, it became a community thing. So I would definitely tell you young people that you have a lot to offer, whether you're 22, 24, there's something that you can give back. And like Nick said, at an international level, awesome. But I also believe now, in the time that we're living, where we're seeing division wanting to take its foothold in this country, I think it's already taking place. But we can really bring back what it is to be a life-changing person. And I'm telling you, it can start off with donuts, you making donuts, or if you're known to make arts and crafts, hey, I want to do arts and crafts, even if they're not a foster family. You know, but if you know of a family that's in need, you know that you can give something back, and it could be 5 minutes from your house, 10 minutes from your house, and it'll definitely bring a difference.
I love it. I love it, Pete. Choose one myth about the foster care system that is not true. Such an open-ended question.
Well, I'll tell you what, a myth, which is a myth, and it's a little hard one, and I'll share it with you guys because we can do it here. Do not get kids that have been sexually abused, because they will sexually abuse your kids. Do not, it was with that emphasis. Do not bring kids who have been sexually abused, because they will sexually abuse your kids. The boys, they will probably want to rape your daughters if you have daughters in your home. And that's a myth. And I'm going to say this now, sexual abuse affects many dynamics of a young person's life, present and in the future. Again, what I mentioned earlier, you're bringing a world into your home. And whether it be sexual abuse, physical abuse, neglect, you name it, you're bringing that. And I want you to know that in the foster care system, they just don't throw you in blindly. You actually have to go through certifications. You have to go through training. If you feel the call to, you know, I want to work. There's a segment here in LA County that works with girls, underage girls, who are being prostituted. Underage girls. I think in my city, the youngest one was 12 years old. They rescued her, and she was a 12-year-old girl. And she was being prostituted maybe 15, 20 minutes from here. But there's a specialized training that you will go through that, you know, and that's why I want you to know there is resources. They're just not going to tell you, hey, well, tell them the ABCs in your dad's best, you know, fishing story. There is a special, there's, you know, we specialize with boys. That was our, that was really my calling for a long time. And I wanted to do that. Like I told you guys earlier, we're known now as the boys' home. I know that boys need, they need to go outside. I know that boys are rough. I was laughing at my sons the other day because I saw four boys trying to knock down a tree, beating it with a stick. And I was baffled because I was like, I mean, they were hitting it their hardest, but it let me into their world, how a boy works, you know. Boys are tough, they're rough. And again, we got that training through our foster care agency, and I think we're definitely specializing in that area. So don't be afraid. There's resources out there, and you can work, whether it's kids. I know of a lady who's 67, and she only works with girls who are about to transition out of foster care. She has five girls who are 17 years old. And she says, my job is to get these girls ready for womanhood, which is coming, and everything from, you name it, cooking, cleaning, looking for a job, boys, you know, she talks to them about boys, what type of husband you're going to be looking for, you know, so it's, there's just so many categories out there that there is resources out there within the agencies and even with other foster families as well.
Awesome, bro. This has been so inspiring. We're coming to the end here, and I just wanted to let everyone understand this, that it was about 2.5 years ago where I felt, man, like, especially really inspired by someone I know who wanted to adopt a girl, but they already had kids in the home and their home wasn't big enough to have that girl come in. And in the state that they lived in is California, to add on a room or convert an attic, you know, to anyone, you know, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, who has that to, you know? And then who has the $40,000 on top, $80,000 to help change America? Mm. But, you know, I started, you were participating, you and your wife, on that think tank groups that we had with Tammy Barnett and many other people. Michael Reagan, the adopted son of President Reagan, was there. And we were, you know, just trying to reverse engineer. How does a county of Ventura County, for instance, of a population of 1 million, how do we reverse engineer with the X amount of churches, and what do we do, and how do we centralize or streamline a system that empowers these families to get, you know, the resources that they need from the community? And obviously that's still in infant development mode, but Pete, you and your wife have been key inspirations to me on that. And you know that it's just a matter of time before something like that is birthed, where we could really make a model, a pilot per county, and see how it goes. But I just want to encourage you out there. You know, I reckon it's going to be only a matter of time before a 12-year-old kid says, oh my gosh, I know a foster family. They need a bigger new car. Let's do a GoFundMe for them. Right. Those kinds of things. I think this next generation is going to put a shame on that innovation and generosity on that. And I think the time is now. And, you know, at the same time, also be aware of, and since we're kind of on the thread of this, the abuse in America that happens in the home happens more in the summertime because the kids are home. Mm-hmm. Now imagine the kids are home and the parents are home.
Yeah.
I'm anticipating the mental health stats coming back for 2020 in about a year for us to actually understand suicide, attempted suicide, drug addiction, alcoholism, double basically for the country. That's my personal prediction. I might be wrong. Hope I'm wrong. But for you to just be aware of not only of the local need, and you to become the local hero, if you will, for those around you, but to know that there are more hurting people out there, that just make sure that you're doing your part, whether it's a phone call, whether it's donuts, whether it's this or that. So thank you for inspiring us, Pete, to make the world a better place here, especially make America great. Three things that I always ask my guests, Pete. Number one, what are you most thankful for? Mm.
I'm going to say definitely being home right now. I'm really thankful. Like, that was the conversation I had with my wife yesterday, coming home. We were walking around the block, and I said, I'm thankful for you. I said, I'm really grateful for being home. So yeah, definitely being home right now.
Awesome. What's the greatest obstacle that you've been faced with that's now turned into the greatest blessing or opportunity?
Wow, that's a good one. I would say the biggest obstacle was because used to being on the go and hey, let's fix this now. Has been my biggest obstacle was patience. Being patient at home. And now the blessing of slowing down, I see it. Like, okay, be patient with your son when he's having a bad moment. Because what does that bring me? That brings me a son that comes back. Though he's having a bad moment right now, he'll come back 20 minutes later and say, hey, Dad, listen, this is why I was feeling this way. And that just spurs into a 30-minute conversation. And again, another connection between father and son.
You and Isabel actually are probably the one of the wisest parents I've ever met in my life, actually. The stories that I hear from how you guys deal with the things that come up within the home, very unique because of your unique situation and the boys there and just the honesty and transparency, bro. You've inspired me and you have actually probably a little bit more patience than I think I have in myself when it comes to my kids. So last question. What's the last thing you want to leave with the audience? If you had one or two sentences left, what would you tell them?
Oh man, if you're a father out there, I really have this heart for dads right now. Time flies so fast. And I, maybe because I have a house full of boys, I feel just this responsibility, but if you're a father, make every day count, you know, my kids are into blackjack right now. Dad, teach us blackjack. You know, so we have blackjack nights. My kids are starting into tools. Dad, can I use the handsaw? All right, yeah, you know. And mind you, every part of me says, no, because you're going to mess up. Or, no, I need to cut this way. Or, no, but I see them. Just, and I'm really asking God, help me not be selfish enough to say, well, no, not right now. You know, so I'm speaking to the fathers, really, because it's been in my heart, you know, to the fathers. And if you're a single mom, ask what male role model can come into your life for your kids. This is just me. I'm speaking just personally. Or even a female role model, you know, if you have daughters, you know. Ask to be surrounded. Lord, help me bring people into my home, you know, because I know it's very private. I know my mom was very private about being a single mom. She didn't want no one in her house, nor in her business. But I would say if you're a single parent out there, don't give up. If you're a single parent out there, know that it's okay to ask for help, that it's okay to say, hey, can you help me teach my son how to drive today? You know, that's pretty much what I can say right now.
I love that. And to any churches that have a single mom in their network, ask them, how can we help you, please? Yeah. Yep. Let's be the hands and feet of love. Mm-hmm. Pete, this has been incredible. Fun, chill, man. I love you so much. And we'll be going fishing together soon. And thank you for making the world a better place. Give our love to your wife.
Well.
And love you, man. God bless you.
Love you, man. I look forward to seeing you again, and we'll keep in touch.
Sounds good. To everyone out there listening, thank you for watching on this Monday's episode of the Nick Vujicic Podcast. Share this with other people. You never know what seeds of hope and faith this is going to give into your friend's life as well. Make sure you pick up the phone. Call a friend. You never know if they're depressed and they haven't told you. We all can be a world changer, so make sure you do your part. Love you all so much. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening. Help us reach as many people as possible by giving us a rating, a review, and subscribing to this podcast. Love you so much, and remember, share this with anyone you know who needs to hear this as well. I'll see you next week.